Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Dan Lynch joins me. We're going to talk about Bitcoin and Bitcore, an open source library that helps you deal with Bitcoin. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch. Episode 303, recorded July 30th, 2014. Bitcore. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com. Bringing you each week. There we go. The movers, the shakers, the big projects, the small projects, the projects you might be using every day and unaware of, projects you might want to just immediately go run out and try. Really cool. Joining me this week, like many times before, welcome back to the show, Dan Lynch, my co-host.
Hey, it's good to be back.
Yeah. Last time we were together, We were actually in the same time zone and everything. So I really appreciate your tour of Liverpool for me. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I definitely gave you a workout there. We walked kind of, what was it, 6 or 7 miles or something?
It wasn't my idea. Yeah.
Specifically.
And you're still in Liverpool, yeah. I presume, yes?
I am still in Liverpool, yes, in the northwest of England, over the pond there. Actually, no, you're on the west coast, aren't you? So I'm really kind of over the
pond.
I'm
way away from you. Yeah, I'm like eight time zones from you. Yeah, I'm actually back in Santa Monica in my primary client's location. You may recognize the tree behind me. I've got my big Blue Yeti Pro again and all the usual accompaniments here. So now we're over with this week in the weather and everything else. Let's talk about today's show. Today's show, we have a really interesting guest on. It's actually somebody who talked to me, wanted to actually get interviewed at OSCON last week, but didn't have time because we already had somebody else picked for that. But it's the Bitcore project. Bitcore, as I understand it, is a interface to the Bitcoin protocol and allows you, through the power of JavaScript, both client-side and server-side, to make transactions, examine things, and whatever else you can do with Bitcoin. I don't know a lot about Bitcoin, but I've sort of been tracking the project as it's come along, which, of course, we've got two experts on the show to actually talk about Bitcoin and how their Bitcore project works together. We have, coming up in a moment, we'll have Ryan Charles and Manuel Arroz. Probably mispronounced that. Sorry about that. Dan, what do you know about this so far?
I've just been having a look at it, and it looks really, really interesting. Bitcoin is a big interest of mine, and I know a reasonable amount about – I nearly said a lot. I don't know a lot. I know a reasonable amount about Bitcoin. JavaScript is a bit fuzzy, so I'll let you guys discuss the low-level programming stuff, and then I'll be able to help out with. But it looks really interesting. I'm looking forward to finding out more.
Very good. Well, without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Ryan Charles. Welcome to the show.
Yes.
Hi. Yeah. Hi. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in San Francisco, California.
Ah, so just a little north of me, since I'm in Santa Monica, so just down the road. Hi, can you see me waving? No, okay.
Yeah,
if you could, I would be very worried. I think there's some mountains in the way and a few other things between here and there. And let's also welcome on Manuel Arroz. Is that close?
Yeah. Hey, Randall. Arroz is the right pronunciation.
Very good, very good. Well, I've been taking Spanish for a while, so hopefully I'll get some of that right. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Very cool. I've been there a number of times, and it's always been a pleasure to hang out there for a while and see the tango dancers and everything else that we had up there. So, good. Well, welcome both you guys to the show. Ryan, let's start with you. Why don't you give us a 30,000-foot view of what Bitcore is and what the problem it is it's solving?
Sure. So, Bitcore is a JavaScript Bitcoin library that works both in the browser and in Node. It's originally from some software written by a guy named Stefan Thomas in 2011. He wrote a JavaScript Bitcoin full node. And at BitPay, we really needed something like this. We have a full JavaScript stack. We use Node on the back end and JavaScript on the front end. So we really needed this library. Well, Stefan Thomas sort of went on and did other things. So we adopted his code base and turned it into this sort of just general library that does all sorts of stuff for Bitcoin-related functions and stuff. And we realized that it was better for us to re-open source this than it was for us to keep it closed source. So we did this over the course of last year, 2013. We made a bunch of improvements to the library and then reopen sourced it early this year, 2014. So that's the history in a nutshell. It is a general purpose Bitcoin library. You can connect to the Bitcoin network. You can create transactions. You can do lots of other things with the Bitcoin cryptography, all sorts of other features on top of the Bitcoin network that are just useful if you're writing a Bitcoin app. And of course, because it's written in JavaScript, it works on every platform. You know, you can use it in a web browser on anything, on an iPhone or whatever, like on your desktop computer. You can use it on your server in Node because we have optimizations for Node. So that's it. That's the history in a nutshell. General purpose JavaScript Bitcoin library.
Well, I'm sure that many of our audience is familiar with the Bitcoins and what they are, but why don't you give us sort of the background of that too? Like, how did it come about and what do you use it for?
Sure. So it's easy for me to forget to explain Bitcoin to people just because, you know, I spend all day on this stuff. So,
Yeah, sure.
I mean, in a nutshell, so Bitcoin is a protocol. It's a protocol for storing and transmitting value. And the central technological innovation of Bitcoin is something called the blockchain. The blockchain is the history of all transactions. And the blockchain is secured with cryptography. There's the proof of work function that ensures that you can't double spend money. And that uses the SHA-256 hash function. And Bitcoin also uses public-private key pairs from elliptic curve cryptography for spending money. So you have private keys that give you access to your money. And when you spend money, you sign a transaction that goes into the blockchain. Well, Bitcore does all of this stuff. It can create the transactions. You can sign it. You can manage your private keys. You can connect to the network because Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer network. So when you want to download the blockchain, you connect to other peers and you send them messages and say, I wish to download the blockchain, basically. And all those commands are in Bitcore. So you can connect to the peer-to-peer network and download the blockchain and verify it and all that stuff using Bitcore. So there's that. That's sort of the Bitcoin protocol layer. And we also have lots of other features on top of that. So, for instance, we've recently finished the payment protocol. The payment protocol is it's an easier way of making Bitcoin transactions that doesn't really have anything to do with the blockchain. You can create a payment request and sign it, and then somebody else can see your payment request because you deliver it to them, and then they make a payment to you. And because it's signed, they can know that they're sending money to the right person rather than to some random-looking Bitcoin address. So that's an example of a feature that we have on top of the core Bitcoin protocol. And we have several of those other features because there are a bunch of standards in the Bitcoin world, and we're trying to implement all these standards that are just sort of extra features just on top that you can do that make everything easier, make everything more user-friendly, and that you can integrate these into your apps.
So what's your relationship with the project?
So I'm just one of the developers. Bitcore is it is a open source project that's sort of managed by BitPay. We have lots of open source contributors, people that don't work for BitPay, but all the primary developers are people that work for BitPay. And I've made lots of contributions to it. I've added lots of these features and stuff. I've added about half the work on adding payment protocol recently. So I've added a bunch of features to it. And I also do things like update the NPM packages and stuff like that, increase the version numbers, and review other people's source code and stuff like that. So it's actually the developers that work on it are pretty much all the developers at BitPay have some input on this project because it's used in everything that we do. My relationship is just that I spend a larger fraction of my time working on it than most other developers.
Cool. And Manuel, what's your relationship with the project?
Yeah, I joined BitPay 6 months ago, and I spent some months working on it, mainly making it work in the browser because it was initially only working in Node. And then I spent some time also adding lots of tests to make sure Bitcore was compatible with Bitcoin Core, which is the main Bitcoin open source project. And today I'm maintaining the project, adding some functionality and reviewing pull requests, etc.
So, guys, we've got a question from IRC, actually. Our IRC channel's taken away here. If anybody's watching live and they want to jump in, it's on IRC. It's on the Twit IRC. If you go to twit.tv, you can find that there. We have a question from Untoward, who was asking about mining, Bitcoin mining. And I know you gave an explanation of Bitcoin there. I know this is going a little bit deeper, so maybe we need to very quickly tell people what mining is. But basically what he wants to know is, can this do mining or is it purely a payment platform? I think I can tell the answer, but Ryan, I'm going to direct that at you if that's okay. Oh, we may have lost Ryan, okay. I think. Okay, so
I can answer that.
You can answer. Yeah. Sorry, okay, so take it.
So
let's do that
mining
again.
Mining is... Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. Mining is a way to name the Bitcoin transaction verification process. So... As in Bitcoin, there is no central server or authority that can verify the transactions. You need a distributed way of checking that every transaction in the network is indeed valid and that it is sending a Bitcoin balance from someone who actually owns those Bitcoins and some other verifications. So the nodes in the network receive the transactions which are in the network and verify them and try to include them into Bitcoin blocks. This process is called mining because as a reward for doing this, because it has a cost, you need to process all the transactions. Each time one of the nodes achieves to create a new Bitcoin block, he gets rewarded with some Bitcoins. This is called mining because it's similar to how gold mining works, because the amount of Bitcoins generated over time follows a similar function. So in Bitcore, you cannot do mining because it's simply not efficient to do mining in JavaScript. Currently, there are a lot of really specific hardware to do mining, and it runs low-level code like in assembly language or directly hardware that is specifically designed, like ASICs, where the hardware is designed to mine Bitcoins. So it makes no sense to actually mine and try to find new blocks for the Bitcoin network in the live network. But of course, you can. The functions are there, so you can, if you want, you can write your own mining, your own miner using Bitcore. But it won't be economically efficient, or it wouldn't make sense to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very intensive process, if I understand right. Mining. A lot of people will build custom mining rigs, as they call them, with using graphics processors and stuff and multiple cards and so on, because it is such an intensive thing. And it's getting harder, isn't it? Because at the start, it was kind of easier to solve the blocks and get the stuff together, and there was more rewards. And now, I believe, well, it's getting harder all the time. So I imagine that problem's only going to get worse. If you built yourself a web mining tool in using Bitcore and JavaScript and so on, it's going to get harder as time goes on.
Yeah, exactly. The Bitcoin mining and verification algorithm gets harder as more people get into mining. So the more people mining, the harder it gets. So it's and the difficulty of the mining algorithm is rising almost exponentially the last couple of months. So it's getting harder and harder. And currently it makes no sense to have a JavaScript implementation of a miner. Just because there are really optimized hardware versions you would have to compete with.
Hmm. And Ryan gave us a bit of the kind of background of where the project came from and so on. I'm curious. I understand the kind of compatibility stuff about using JavaScript. It runs in lots of different places. It's interesting that you chose to use Node, though. Was that because the project you were kind of inheriting, if you like, was already in Node, or was that a conscious decision?
No, the project we inherited from was Bitcoin.js, which was pure JavaScript, but we needed, this was before I joined BitPay, but BitPay needed to use this functionality both in the client side and the server side, and the JavaScript cryptography was not as fast as we needed, so mainly the cryptography part was implemented in Node and with C++ bindings, so it was super fast. So that was because we needed for the server side cryptography, and it was much faster to do it in with C++ bindings in Node than in just pure JavaScript.
I'd also add a couple of other comments to that. If you want to actually connect directly to the Bitcoin peer-to-peer network, you have to have a normal TCP connection, which you can't do from the browser. So there are things that you can only do from Node. Node lets you establish normal internet connections that you just can't do from the browser. So it's the cryptography and it's all of the peer-to-peer protocol stuff that you can really only do from Node.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, cryptography is obviously quite intensive as well. So you're doing that purely in JavaScript, I imagine, is going to be difficult, or it's probably not as fast as you would like. I'm curious to know what kind of applications. I mean, obviously they're going to be payment based applications. But what kind of applications people are building right now with BitCore, and what are the things that you think are cool that you see people doing? So, Ryan, you're back. I'll direct that to you if that's okay.
Sure, I lost my internet connection for a second there, but I would like to talk about there are some applications that other developers built. So there are things like recently I've talked to people about anything involving wanting to create addresses. People use it to do really basic stuff like validate addresses. So if you have anything on a web page that involves a Bitcoin address, you can validate the address using BitCore. That's one common use case. We have at BitPay developed some very big applications that rely very heavily on Copay. That rely very heavily on BitCore. And one of them is called Copay, which is our multi-signature wallet. So this is what Copay is a way of doing a multi-signature transactions with a very friendly user interface. So what a multi-signature transaction is, rather than normally when you want to spend your Bitcoins, you have like one private key that gives you access to a Bitcoin address. And you can sign a transaction that spends those Bitcoins. Well, there's a small security problem with this. Maybe not so small because a lot of people have lost their Bitcoins. If their computer is compromised and that private key is stolen. So multi-signature transactions let you have multiple devices where each device has a different private key, and several of them are required to sign a transaction before it's valid. So that way, if somebody's computer is compromised, one computer being compromised doesn't mean that their Bitcoins are stolen. So Copay is a very friendly user interface that lets you collaborate with other people to do multi-signature transactions. So for instance, I could have some private keys on my computer, and you have private keys on your computer. And we do a two-of-two multi-sig wallet so that both of us are required to sign transactions before they're valid. And all the sort of Bitcoin stuff in Copay uses BitCore because you can do multi-signature transactions using BitCore. Now, there's a lot more to Copay. Copay has a lot of code in it that has nothing to do with BitCore because it has to establish these peer-to-peer connections and stuff between each other that don't use the Bitcoin network. But all the Bitcoin stuff that you need to do for multi-signature transactions can be done with BitCore. So that's probably the biggest application that we have right now that uses BitCore most extensively. And Manuel can talk a lot more about that. We have one more project called Insight. And I'll let Manuel take over if you want to add anything to what I'm saying. But Insight is another project that uses BitCore extensively. Insight is a blockchain explorer. This lets you basically get more information about the blockchain. So the blockchain, if you use a normal full node like Bitcoin QT, it stores the blockchain in a I don't want to say compressed, but it just stores the raw blockchain on your hard drive. And sometimes there are questions that you want to ask about the blockchain that are really hard to query if all you have is the regular blockchain. So Insight makes it fast to answer certain queries, particularly finding the balance of an address or finding unspent outputs that you have access to with an address. So it's a blockchain explorer. You can go check out insight.bitpay.com and check it out and see it running in real time. And it has a nice interface. And you can see transactions as they occur on the network. You can see new blocks. And this uses BitCore extensively because all the stuff about parsing transactions, parsing a block and finding the transactions in it. If you have a transaction, you can look at what are the inputs and what are the outputs of that transaction using BitCore. So BitCore does all that stuff. It's all the Bitcoin protocol stuff that's useful for those apps.
Hmm. And I was just looking there. I'm curious about, obviously, this is all Node, JavaScript, and so on. Could I link into this from another language? Would that be sensible? Could I use the API? You says you've got a REST API here. I'm looking at the Insight website at the moment. So does anyone do that, or is that a silly idea? Absolutely.
No, that's a fantastic idea. That's sort of the idea of Insight. So let me back up a second and give a bigger background here, because I realized when I gave the overview, I missed something important. Mm-hmm. There's one primary problem we're trying to solve with BitCore. We want to make it easy for developers to access the real Bitcoin network. We don't want it to be that developers have to rely on centralized services. So there are lots of services out there that provide an API that you can use, and you can build apps around these APIs. But these APIs are proprietary, and we don't want developers being locked down into these proprietary APIs. So BitCore lets you, it's completely open source and lets you interact with the real Bitcoin network. There's nothing proprietary about it. You're not being locked into anything. It's all open source. It's not one person's organization or something like that. Now, Insight is a open source application that is built on BitCore and built on the real Bitcoin network. And we do run a version of it available for people at insight.bitpay.com. However, anybody can run their own service. And what Insight does is it does have an API that you can use. And the API is extremely useful if you're building a wallet, which we use in our own wallet, Copay. Copay uses API Insight to get the unspent transaction outputs. So you can use the API of Insight. It has an API. You can use this from any application. You can use it from an application developed on your phone or on your desktop computer or your laptop computer or whatever. It's absolutely for that purpose, with the one very important note, which is that you don't have to rely on BitPay's services. Insight is open source, and you can run your own copy of Insight if you want to. You don't have to rely on us. You can create, you know, there are actually a few Bitcoin companies that have created instances of Insight. If you go to, I think it's chain.localbitcoins.com, if I remember correctly. We have a list of them on the Insight website. If you go to insight.is, that's sort of the download website, you can see a list of other Bitcoin companies that are running their own version of Insight. So yes, it has an API, and you can use the API, you know, on the BitPay hosted version, or anybody else's hosted version, or you can host your own.
Hmm. And if I want to host my own Insight server, obviously I'm going to need Node. What are the kind of requirements for that? And is there any pre-built stuff I can just install, like an image or something, anywhere I could get for a VM or something maybe?
Sure, that's a great question. So unfortunately, it is a little bit difficult to install Insight at the moment. What you have to do is you have to install a Bitcoin D. We rely on Bitcoin D to manage the blockchain. And although you can technically do this with BitCore, we deliberately use Bitcoin D because we want to make sure that we are bug for bug compatible with the rest of the network. So that when you're verifying the blockchain, we don't want there to be any possibility that there are any bugs and alternative implementations of Bitcoin. So we use Bitcoin D to actually download the blockchain and verify it. So you have to install that first, and you have to link up Insight to Bitcoin D. And then Insight will build its database by scanning the BitcoinD blockchain. So it just Insight will read the files, the blockchain files, and it will connect to BitcoinD over RPC and over the peer-to-peer network. And it will just communicate with BitcoinD and get all of the information about the blockchain so that Insight can build and maintain its own database. So it's not that hard, but it is a little bit harder than we would like. So one of our sort of goals is to make it easier to install Insight. It's not that hard. I'm probably making it sound harder than it is. if you know how to install an app and stuff, it's pretty straightforward.
That's cool. That's cool. You're managing expectations. I like that. just to be on the safe side. So one thing I'm curious about with the whole, I've used Bitcoin a little bit. I'm really enthusiastic about it. But one thing it seems here, it might be a problem with the design, is the fact that every time somebody makes a transaction, of course, it goes into the chain, the bit chain and so on. And that carries on getting bigger and bigger. And as you were saying, that's got to be distributed throughout the whole network. You've got the peer-to-peer thing going on, but isn't that going to keep getting more complex as time goes on and more data to ship around and more difficult? There doesn't seem to be any way around that I can see.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, the blockchain will grow in size indefinitely. There's no upper limit to the size of the blockchain. It is getting bigger and bigger. I can't remember what the latest size is. It's like, I don't know, something like 15 gigabytes today. So that's the history of all transactions, right? The history of all transactions in the Bitcoin network. And it's only going to grow. Now, there are a few important notes about this. One note is that actually the size of a block right now is limited to 1 megabyte. So each new block, which happens approximately every 10 minutes, is 1 megabyte. So the blockchain won't grow any faster than that. So it's going to grow at 1 megabyte or less per 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a limitation of the Bitcoin protocol. Like, if we want to process as many transactions as Visa, which, you know, we would all like to ultimately do, we would like to be able to handle, as many transactions as the world needs. Well, we'll have to remove that constraint. But what that means is we have to do all sorts of things along the way. There are lots of small problems that we have to solve to make sure that we can scale. So we have to increase the efficiency of transmitting the blockchain to new computers. So this is one thing the core developers, such as Jeff Garzik, who works for BitPay. Jeff Garzik is one of the core developers who works on what's called Bitcoin Core, which I was talking about Bitcoin D earlier. Bitcoin D and Bitcoin Core are the same thing, and both of them are different than Bitcore. They're all named confusingly similarly, but they're different things. So Bitcoin Core, which is sort of the main reference client that was originally written by Satoshi Nakamoto, is written in C++, and Jeff Garzik is one of the core developers who works for BitPay. And one of the things that they're working on is making that more efficient. So just making it so that it's faster to download the blockchain so that you don't waste, network bandwidth and stuff sending data that doesn't need to be sent. And so there absolutely is a huge problem here with how are we going to scale the Bitcoin network to be 1,000 times bigger than it is right now or whatever, right? Well, we just have to take it one step at a time and solve these problems as we get to them. Eventually, like, you're not going to, you know, ordinary people will probably not be running a full Bitcoin node on their personal computers. I think that'll probably be something that, you know, you pay a service or something like that that manages the blockchain. If you want to, you can run your own, you know, computer that has, you know, 1,000 terabytes of hard drive space or something like that in the future. To manage this, but probably most people won't. Already today, most people don't manage the blockchain themselves. They use other services. They use like Insight. Insight is one way that you can escape from having to manage the blockchain yourself. You can manage the blockchain yourself at any moment because there's nothing centralized about any of this. It's open for anybody. But you can also just choose to offload that work onto somebody else if you want to. So yeah, there absolutely is a problem that the size of the blockchain will grow with no limit. But it's a problem that we are solving sort of as the Bitcoin network grows.
Yeah, and I hear a lot of criticism of Bitcoin because there's been volatility of the price in exchange to dollars and euros and sterling and other things. But has there been any problems with confidence in Bitcoin? Has that affected your business at all? We've had some big things going on, like Mt. Gox, which was one of the big exchanges that kind of went up in a ball of flames. There was some stuff going on there. Do you find that there's any problems with confidence in, from customers and clients and people who want to use Bitcoin? Do they worry about that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think there is, but it's not really – it's not a major problem for our business. So the really – If you look at the news, you'll see a lot of bad news happening all the time. But for those of us who've been around the Bitcoin world for a long time, all this stuff, this is just how it always is. There's lots of bad news, but there's always lots of good news all the time. It's like any other industry. I mean, my takeaway from all this is that the Bitcoin network just continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So yeah, people do lose confidence, but only some people. Right, like right now, the price has dipped slightly recently, and I think that's a sort of overall decrease in the value of the Bitcoin network. People value it slightly less now than they did 1 or 2 weeks ago, but only slightly. And people value it way, way more than they did, you know, a year ago. There are ups and downs of people's emotions. There are bad things that happen. So you mentioned Mt. Gox. Mt. Gox was a terrible disaster. Mt. Gox was I'm not really sure what happened other than their business just collapsed in this absolutely spectacular fashion. And lots of people lost money. It was terrible. I mean, I've met people who lost money at Mt. Gox. Mt. Gox, I really don't know what happened. I don't know if it was a computer glitch or if they got hacked and the money was stolen. I really don't actually know what happened, but the money is lost, and it's terrible. But Mt. Gox is just one of many businesses in the Bitcoin world. And as terrible as it is that Mt. Gox collapses, it really has nothing to do with the Bitcoin protocol or the Bitcoin ecosystem as a whole, which it just continues to grow as more people, you know, find it useful.
Yeah, and one of the positive, really positive things about Bitcoin and digital currencies in general that people don't talk about is the ability to build logic into the currency, if that makes sense. So I was listening to some economists discuss this, and what they were saying was that although there is clearly a lot of people who don't like Bitcoin and maybe don't want it to succeed for various reasons, say, for example, I'm a big Western country and I want to give some aid to another country to buy food, and I want to make sure that they don't go off and buy planes and guns and tanks and bombs or whatever with that money. Currently, if I give them money, cash, whatever, in whatever currency, there's no way to govern that. Whereas if I give them Bitcoin, I could build into the logic of the thing. I can tell what they've spent it on, for a start, because I can look at the transaction chain, the history, and so on. So that's a really positive thing. So there's lots more positive stuff. Do you guys try and highlight the positive stuff, I would imagine, for Bitcoin and so on?
Yeah, actually, I want to bring up, because it seems related, Manuel, your work on proof of existence, which is a really cool application on top of the Bitcoin blockchain, which I think is exactly what Dan is talking about. Do you want to describe that?
Yeah, sure. What many people don't know about Bitcoin is that it's an open like financial system where innovation is really easy to occur because it's open source and anyone can create new applications on top of it or even change the core project. One application I developed last year is what Ryan was talking about, proof of existence, which is a simple web application that allows you to embed a document's hash or the document's cryptographic digest into a Bitcoin blockchain. This allows you to timestamp the document in a decentralized way because the Bitcoin blockchain is sort of a like decentralized clock where each block is like a tick. When you insert a document's hash into the blockchain, you're actually proving that that document existed at that moment in time. So this is just a small example of other kinds of applications you can build using a decentralized consensus system as Bitcoin is. And there's also like Bitcoin transactions are actually quite complex or more complex than many people know. the regular Bitcoin transaction where person A sends some Bitcoins to person B, it's a transaction that contains a really simple script in Bitcoin scripting language, which is like a really constrained scripting language in like reverse Polish notation, where you can always know that the script will execute in a limited amount of time. And it's a really simple scripting language. But every Bitcoin transaction has a built-in script, which in most Bitcoin transactions is almost always the same script that sends Bitcoins from one address to another. But you can actually do more complex stuff with that scripting language. One example is what Ryan was talking about, which is multi-signature transactions. But there's basically a programming language built in into Bitcoin transactions, so you can make other interesting stuff. For example, this application Proof of Existence uses another script, a special script that allows you to embed a little amount of data into the Bitcoin transaction, and there are like you could lock a transaction in time so that it can only enter the blockchain after a certain Bitcoin block, and other more interesting. There are many other cool stuff you can do.
So I'm curious. How much can you do with just the JavaScript client side libraries? Can you make transactions with that? Can I have a payments form on my website and have it just using the client side stuff be able to do that transaction?
Yeah, in fact, our Copay wallet is fully client-side right now. It creates the transaction, it signs it. You can create new private keys. The only parts you cannot do in the client-side is connecting to the actual Bitcoin network because of the limitations of the browsers. But everything else, you can do it using Bitcore in the client-side.
So I'd have to fulfill it somehow by connecting, say, to an instance of Insight running somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. That's how we do it on Copay. But you could also write your own application specific server too using Bitcore. Maybe you just need to, I don't know, relay a transaction to a network, and that's a really simple server using Bitcore. But we're using Insight because we need to get the unspent outputs or the unspent funds or the available funds for the addresses of the wallet. Then we create the transaction client-side fully. We sign the transaction also client-side and send the bytes for the transaction to Insight, and Insight broadcasts this transaction to a Bitcoin network through a node server.
Now, if someone were to try to make a transaction, then they'd have to, the clients would have to have access to the users, if I understand this right, the private key, and how would he be able to provide that?
Yeah, sorry, I forgot to talk about that. But Copay, as I told you, is fully client-side, and it connects to an Insight server. So the private keys are stored in the HTML5 local storage, encrypted with a passphrase. So when you create a new Copay wallet, it will ask for a passphrase. It will create private keys with which it will manage all your Bitcoin addresses, and it will encrypt them and store them in your browser's local storage. Of course, it will allow you and ask you to back up those private keys in an encrypted form. So when you first create your wallet, it will download a file which contains the private keys encrypted. And then you operate client-side, fully client-side, because you have the private keys encrypted in the local storage. So when you want to create a new transaction, you get the available funds from the Bitcoin network by querying Insight. Then you create the new transaction, and when you want to sign it, you need to decrypt the private keys from the local storage and sign them all client-side, and then send the signed transaction back to Insight.
Now, if I have three different laptops that I use, I could take the that downloaded file and take it over to a different laptop and then upload it to that browser?
Yeah, exactly. You can import the same file into any device. Right now it's working on Android, the web, and also browser extensions, but we're planning to build for many other platforms like iOS, etc.
And you guys aren't actually offering a public thing like Insight. Actually, you are, right? The BitPay thing itself, isn't that something kind of like that?
Yeah, there's a test instance of Copay at copay.io/app where you can try it. But we, of course, we always encourage people to build their own instance. We encourage people not to trust centralized third parties. So it's really easy to install your own Copay version.
Very cool. And go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No, I was just saying that it's very easy to try it with the web version because it's just there.
Cool. Now, this is a general question, so whoever wants to answer this is fine. When Bitcoin first came out, I downloaded the OS X wallet, and somebody was giving away like 0.05 just for saying hi. And so I have 0.05 in my possession, which is now worth a lot of money, which is kind of cool. But in order to send it anywhere, I didn't realize the current blockchains up to like 15 gig. You know, I have like 10 gig downloaded so far, and it says it's got to keep downloading. So I need to get the whole 15 gig of the current chain in order to be able to spend that anywhere. Either one of you.
No, you don't have to have the full Bitcoin. So this is one of the benefits of Insight. So if one way you can avoid having to download the entire blockchain is to use Insight. You can use our public running instance of Insight. And you can see the unspent outputs and stuff that you need to spend, and you can see you can broadcast a transaction using Insight. So this is a way you can avoid having to download the entire blockchain. It does mean you have to trust somebody running Insight, though. So the one major advantage of downloading the blockchain and verifying it for yourself is that this can be done in a completely trustless way. You don't have to trust anybody to download the blockchain. But it does also mean that if you want to not trust anybody, you do have to download the entire blockchain. So it's basically a matter of how much trust do you want to give in other people. And Bitcoin lets you choose how much trust. You can trust somebody else entirely with the blockchain. But let me point out why the trust matters here. BitPay, we're a very reliable company. We're never going to scam anybody. But we could, on Insight, like it's technically possible that we could say that you know, a transaction does or does not exist on Insight. And if you trust us, we could, in principle, and we, again, obviously we'd never do this, we're trustworthy people, but we could scam you. So that's why it's valuable to stay away from that. Now, we would never do that, but maybe somebody else would. Maybe somebody would try to scam you by giving you fake information about the blockchain. Somebody's giving you a payment. Maybe they want to make you think you've received that payment, even though they have not actually delivered it to you. So if you're trusting that person to tell you that they've sent you a payment, like if somebody is they're running a copy of Insight and they're saying, I've paid you. Look, you can see on this copy of Insight that I've paid you. Well, they could just be scamming you, right? Mm. So there are different ways you can have less of the blockchain and still know that you're probably not being scammed. So there's something called you can run a what's called an SPV node, or a simple payment verification node, which does a lighter version of downloading the entire blockchain. It only downloads block headers and stuff that makes it – you can verify like your payments without having to download the entire blockchain. So that's one way you can not download the blockchain. Or you can use Insight, or you could use an entirely centralized service. There are wallets you can use where not only are you trusting them to hold the blockchain for you, but you're trusting them with your private keys as well. You're giving them everything if you do that. So you can go from one end of the spectrum to the other. You trust absolutely no one, and you download the entire blockchain for yourself, and you verify it yourself. Or you can hand some trust to other people out of, you know, convenience. So that's the spectrum. You don't have to manage the blockchain yourself, but if you don't want to do that, you have to give up some trust. You have to be willing to trust other people to do it for you, basically.
We actually have a great question from the chat room here from Retro D. Bitcoin has several clones since when it came out, like Dogecoin, I guess. Is BitCoin compatible with any of the other ones?
You want to take that one, Manuel?
Right now, it's not compatible. There's some people working on that because they wanted to create inside instances for other alternative currencies like Dogecoin, or there are millions. So they have created BitCoin versions for, I think, Dogecoin and X11 and some other coins. We are not supporting them officially from BitPay, but we encourage any altcoin fan to fork BitCoin and create their own version. It's not that hard to do so.
Cool. And also, we haven't talked much about the actual project and its governance and stuff. Whoever wants to answer this. What's the relationship between BitPay, the company, and what's happening with BitCoin, and who decides what's in the next release of BitCoin?
Sure. So there's not much of an official process. It's something that all BitPay developers contribute to. And Manuel and I are just sort of the biggest contributors, but we all sort of decide if there's something we need, we can just communicate with each other and decide on new features that we need and decide what priorities we have. If somebody wants to add a feature, they can add a feature. I've done that myself where I want a feature in BitCoin. So that's how I became one of the bigger contributors, was by just creating the feature that I wanted for whatever reason. So I wanted it for when I was working on Copay, I would have a feature that I needed in Copay that pretty much needed something in BitCoin, so I would implement it in BitCoin. So there's no official process, really. It's very just a collaborative, communicative thing where we decide, you know, we want to add these features and somebody just adds it or whatever. We talk about things like, we do have big picture goals, like one of Manuel's greatest contributions is making BitCoin work in the browser. And that took, you can probably do a better job describing it than I can, Manuel, but this was something that we all agreed was very important, and Manuel took it over and made it happen. Do you want to maybe discuss that?
I spent like a month making that work. Mainly because there were many parts of BitCoin that were written in C++ bindings in Node. So we had to get a replacement for that, as that parts of the code that used C++ heavily. And it wasn't, we're currently using Browserify for most of BitCoin, which is a tool that allows you to convert Node libraries into browser compatible libraries, but for all the C++ binding parts we had to get replacement in pure JavaScript. So it was basically a job of replacing chunks of code with not replacing, but having pure JavaScript versions of the C++ parts of the code, and making all the tests work and pass both in Node and the browser at the same time.
Cool. And this is all in Java, or it's being transitioned, as you said, to JavaScript from some C++ stuff. What's it like debugging in JavaScript? I've had to do little bits of it for some jQuery stuff, and it's really annoying. What kind of tools do you guys use, and how do you actually not tear your hair out after the end of the day?
Either you want to take that, Manuel? We could both give interesting perspectives on that.
We actually don't talk much about debugging, so it's a good opportunity. But I mainly use the browser tools from Google Chrome browser, which has pretty good debugging tools there. When you open the developer tools. So when I debug the browser version of BitCoin or any of the other projects, I use that heavily. That's mainly it for me.
Yeah, I'll give just my crude way I solve this problem. So sometimes you get weird problems with JavaScript, And I don't really use any debuggers like you might use in another language. I just use console.log to spit out information about what's going on if I don't understand it. So in order to figure out what's going on, I look at what is the output of the application, you know, what is it actually doing, what do I think it should be doing, and I have to figure out where is it going wrong. So I go into the code and I just have it spit out some information that tells me what's going on so I can figure out, you know, how to fix it. So I don't have a sophisticated way to debug. If somebody wants to give me a better way to debug JavaScript, I'd really appreciate it.
I used to tell people the same thing about my Perl coding. I said, I don't use the Perl debugger. I had to write a course in that for one of my clients. And I said, I don't use a Perl debugger. Larry didn't either. And that's why there's not a big section about the debugger in the first CAML, because even though it was there, neither one of us had ever used the debugger. I just tell people, I don't use the debugger. I just add print until it works. And it sounds like you're the same sort of JavaScript programmer that I am a Perl programmer. Sounds convenient. That also seems to be my way of debugging JavaScript too. I just add console log until it works. And so it's nice that console log, at least in Safari, allows you to output an object, and you can use the triangle to expose things to an object. I wish it would allow you to send messages to it, though. It doesn't seem to be any way to get from here to there, but maybe somebody else out there's got an answer for me on how to do that. I just haven't quite figured that out. We have a question, actually, got whispered in my ear. We haven't asked yet about the license. What license is this under and why?
Sure. So it's licensed under MIT license, very deliberately. We consider the MIT license to be the freest license. It lets people have the most freedom in how they use BitCore. It doesn't really place any constraints at all. So it's a very conscious choice. We don't want to use GPL because we don't want to require that people necessarily make applications on this open source. Now, we prefer to make applications open source, but it just places too much of a constraint. We think it's better overall for everyone involved if it's MIT license.
Cool. So how do you guys get paid? What is this? Clearly is not a labor of love. BitPay exists. Are you looking at a platform as a service sort of model or something else?
Sure. So that's a question about BitPay itself. So we are, I mean, our primary business is a Bitcoin payment processor. We make it easy for merchants to accept Bitcoin. So you couldn't have asked a more appropriate question for today of all days. How do we get paid? We literally just announced this morning that we have we're allowing merchants to accept Bitcoin completely for free forever. So you can accept Bitcoin with zero transaction fees and zero monthly fees just forever. Now the way we're able to do this is for a long time. First of all, we did charge for merchants accepting Bitcoin, and that was our source of revenue. So we would. You know, we were believers in open source. So this is a way of us investing in the community. We don't earn any money from BitCore. This is a way that we can improve the whole Bitcoin ecosystem. But it's not charity. We're not doing this because we're giving anything away. It's better for us to contribute to the open source ecosystem of Bitcoin because it improves the whole Bitcoin world. If we can bring more merchants into Bitcoin because the Bitcoin world is more appealing to merchants, then we benefit from that. Now, we're able to today give this service away for free with exactly the same reasoning. If this is better for the entire Bitcoin world, it's better for us. Now, we don't earn money from this. I mean, we have venture capital funding that we're now using so that we can pay our salaries and stuff. Without earning as much money from companies. We also do charge for more deeper levels of support for bigger merchants. So bigger merchants who need to be in touch with us, they will pay us money. So they buy additional levels of service over the sort of free version that anybody can get. But we'll have to look at the numbers and stuff after we have this free service available for a while. But that's our sort of primary form of revenue are the bigger merchants that pay to, have a very good level of support where they can, talk with us about their specific issues and have us work on specific problems for them because they're because they have these sort of detailed needs. So our primary form of revenue is from that, is from these big merchants. And the open source stuff we don't earn money from, but it's just a form of investment. It's a way of making the whole Bitcoin world better, because if we can make Bitcoin grow, then our business will grow with it.
One of the questions in the chat room, which is sort of a funny, so I'll ask it anyway, is you get your salary in Bitcoin?
That's another great, great question. You've picked the right two people to talk to. There are maybe 8 or 10 of us at BitPay that accept our salaries fully in Bitcoin. And Manuel and I both are amongst those people.
Hmm. Wow, that's amazing. That's cool. Dan, you had a question?
Yeah, I was interested in you mentioned there's about 8 people there working on it. I was interested in contributions from, say, the community and so on. What's the kind of community around like this, around this like? So you get many contributions coming in, and how do you deal with all that? You're on GitHub, obviously, which is great for that. What's the kind of policy there? Is there much contribution going on?
There is. So there's a lot of interest in this. There are a lot of, I would say at this point, a lot of people find one piece of BitCore that they need and for their application. And so they use that piece, and then maybe they find something else that they need that BitCore doesn't have, so they add that piece to it. So we've gotten a lot of contributions like that that are like small pieces that somebody out there needs for their app that they go out of their way to add to BitCore. And so we just review it. Anybody can review code, and before there are only a small handful of us that can actually pull stuff into BitCore. So at least one other person has to review any code that goes into BitCore. So if it's somebody from the community, it'll probably be Manuel or I that like review it and pull it in.
Cool. We're almost out of time. Is there anything that we haven't asked that you want to make sure our audience is aware of? It's a tough question.
It's a very tough question. I do want to point out that BitCore is not the only JavaScript Bitcoin library. There are alternatives. When you make the choice about what Bitcoin library you want to use in your application, if there's anything deficient about BitCore that you want to see, let us know about it. Create an issue. We try to be very responsive to what people need in this library. So if there's something you need, just to give you an example of this, a long time ago in the Bitcoin world, a few months ago, I created some code that does message signing in BitCore. And message signing is not a transaction signing. It's a little bit different. It's signing arbitrary data. And there's a special way to do it in Bitcoin. And I did not finish the task of doing this. I did it sort of halfway because I only did the half that I needed. And then somebody last Friday made a comment that they wanted to see this finished because they needed it for their app. So I'm like, okay, well, I know how to do this. I'll just go ahead and do this. So over the course of 2 days, I just went ahead and sort of filled out the implementation of message signing. So that's just an example. If you want to see features, we will add them if they're genuinely valuable features to BitCore or other things like changes to architecture and stuff like that. That if you feel there are changes, we try to be responsive to all that, primarily on GitHub. So you can create an issue on GitHub and comment or whatever on the GitHub page.
Other than requests for change, other than that sort of thing, are you looking for any resources? Do you need have a particular need for people working on BitCore to provide certain functionality?
There are. There is a list of issues on the GitHub issues page where you can see some of the major things that we're trying to do. So there are. I could list a whole bunch of them. I would just list the same things that are on the GitHub page. Let me just list one of my personal pet desires for BitCore. We don't have a point class implemented in C++ in Node. We need to wrap the OpenSSL point class in C++ in Node so that we have fast, easy access to all the basic point operations that we need, like addition and multiplication. So the way we do this right now is sort of roundabout. What we really need is that point class. So that's an example of something that's on the GitHub issues page, that it's not a priority for me and it's not a priority for any of the other people at BitPay because we have other priorities. But it's something that if somebody else realizes that they need it, maybe they could take the effort to implement that, and that would be awesome. They could pull that in. So you can see the list of issues that we're working on or want or need in BitCore on our issues page.
Very good. All right. And I got yelled at for forgetting these questions last week, so I have to do these two questions that I do every single time. We'll start with Manuel, with you. What's your favorite text editor?
Vim.
not even Vim. Mexican. Darn it. And what's your favorite programming language?
Python, in fact.
No.
Oh.
Lost it on both sides there. Okay. Ryan, same two questions.
Sure. So my favorite editor is Vim. I've used Vim for a long time. I don't use Emacs, and I don't use any sophisticated IDEs or anything like that. I like Vim because basically I can use it everywhere. It's on like any Unix-y computer. I've got the same editor everywhere, and it's a very powerful, fully featured editor. So there's no reason, as far as I'm concerned, to use anything else. So I use Vim. My favorite language, actually, I'm sort of like Manuel. I like Python a lot, but. Since I've been using JavaScript for a long time now, I've really learned to love JavaScript. I think that, there are lots of languages out there. I've used many languages. You have to pick the right tool for the job, and JavaScript is the right tool for all the jobs we're doing right now at BitPay. So I'm very happy to be using JavaScript.
Very good. Very good. Well, guys, it's been wonderful having you on. I know we had a lot of interest in the chat room about this and a lot of run-up to this before the show came on. Really want to thank you for going into detail about what BitCore is about. And I bet a lot of people are going to be looking at their apps now with a different eye, but maybe they can take Bitcoin for what they want to do. Thanks, guys, for both being on the show.
Great. Thanks a lot, Randall.
Thanks, very Randall.
Good. Thanks, guys.
Very good. That was Ryan Charles and Manuel Arroz talking to us about BitCore and lots of things about Bitcoin. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, really, really interesting. It sounds like a fantastic project. And as Ryan said at the end there is a few alternatives to this. And it seems to be a really growing area. I mentioned you might have been able to tell Bitcoin is one of my pet interests as far as an economic perspective. And it looks like it's continuing to grow. And I think it's got a big future. Lots of people running Bitcoin down, trying to say it's no good and all the rest of it. But I think digital currency is here to stay.
Well, I'll have to find something to spend my 0.05 coins on. What is that? Is it about $100 or something now? No, probably $30, somewhere in there. It depends on what day of the week it is, I guess.
Yeah, it's about $200, $250, I think. I mean, don't quote me on that, but it was about $500 per Bitcoin last time I checked, but I could be wrong on that.
Wow. No, it's 0.05, so it's got to be like, what, $10.
Oh, right? sorry, 0.05. Yeah. But that's, I'm way off there then, aren't I? Yeah, sorry. We'll look that up after the show.
I'm sure there's some application somewhere that will tell us exactly how much that actually is. Yeah, I'm excited by this, but I think, it's certainly, if it gives a way for, client-side apps to verify amounts and handle transactions, things like that, we could have done 2 hours on this show easily. There's so much about Bitcoin that's interesting and stuff. Maybe I'll have to bring it back on in another year or so and see where it's gone since then. That'd be kind of cool. But we don't have time to talk anymore about Bitcoin or BitCore. Sorry about that, guys. We do have some upcoming guests. Most of the guests that are currently scheduled, I either met at OSCON or I found out about it at OSCON. That was last week. So I'm still landing a few of them. But the ones that are actually on the schedule right now, we have Crate Data, which is they bill themselves as easy-to-scale real-time SQL data store. Scaling and SQL in the same sentence, I am really looking forward to that, see what that's all about. Another one that I'm also very excited about, Ushahidi. Really amazing thing. Grew out of the 2007 Kenyan election. But what they do is they analyze social networks and look for Instagram postings and tweets and Facebook messages and try to find a pattern about what's going on in a given area. And this has been invaluable to things like where there's floods, where there's hurricanes, where there's social unrest, civil unrest, social unrest, I guess, well, it's sort of the same thing, civil unrest, And they can visualize things that are going on. They have data even before the government. In fact, governments are now using their data stuff. And this is really cool. It's using open source software to really help with social change and with relief efforts and things like that. So I'm really happy they agreed to be on the show. Also on the short list, we have Squitch, S-Q-U-I-T-C-H. No, S-Q-I-T-C-H. The U is missing. That's right. Done by my friend David Wheeler. It's database change management applications. Getting your SQL to be in sync when you're from your dev to your production and having to probably roll things back if things don't work right and stuff is a real pain. But Squitch looks like a really cool way to do it. They manage it with a Git repo, and then you can have partial, you can have commits, you can share things in dev, and all it looks really, really cool. And I'm sure we're actually here at ZipRecruiter, they're talking about switching to Squitch as their main management system for that. We still have a lot of slots open in Q3, so I'm sending out a bunch more mail this weekend again to try to fill out the rest. I'm trying to get a few more of the OSCON people on as well. You can go to twit.tv/floss, which is the homepage for this show. That describes all the things that we're looking at. You can follow me at Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N. Or I'm also on Google Plus as Randall L. Schwartz. You can follow Floss Weekly on Google Plus as Floss Weekly, and I announce the guests as I book them on there. We tape our live show at live.twit.tv, usually 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays. And we have a chat room, and we took a number of questions from the chat room this time. It was really kind of cool that way. If you follow me on Google Plus, you also know that I'm going to be in Seattle area, whatever that means. I'm in the Seattle area on August 23rd in the evening from 7:30 onward. I'll be in the Queen Anne Hill area at the Triumph Bar. I'm going to have a meetup for Pearl people there, and y'all are invited if you're in the greater Seattle area on August 23rd. I'm also on a cruise for the 2 weeks following that. I'm going from Seattle to Anchorage and back. So if you're in one of the major cities that cruises come into, anywhere in that region, please let me know and I can meet up with you. That'll be a lot of fun. So that's all the plugging I want to do. We're really getting close to being out of time. So Dan, anything else you want to plug?
Yeah, very quickly, because I know we're running out of time. Everybody in the UK or in Europe should check out OGCamp, O-G-G-C-A-M-P, which is the biggest open source event in the UK, which I organize along with some other people. Go and check that out. It's ogcamp.org. It's in Oxford in the UK in October on the 4th and 5th. That's Oxford in the UK, in England, not Oxford, Wisconsin, or any other Oxford. So go and check that out. And you can always find me at danlynch.org. You can find all the podcast links, out with us, all that kind of stuff, all on there.
Very cool. Well, I hear the music coming up, so you know what that means. It's time for me to say we'll see you all again next time on Floss Weekly.